The goal for this team is that by the time you are doing your season-ending press conference, the feeling in the building, the feeling in the fan base, and the feeling in the NFL is the Jacksonville Jaguars are a team going in the right direction and are on the rise.
What you would want and how you would feel success is if there were four or five spots that you felt that way about, and overall as a team you felt the way that you do right now about the receiver position.
This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and Tony Boselli. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Boy, can I see some heads swelling in the studio right now after being quoted.
I'm kind of lost. Stated
there in the opening.
Well, maybe if you were here last week, you would have been in there.
I haven't
as well.
Heard that before. Good evening, folks. Jeff Lagerman here, along with Tony Boselli, and what's your title now, Johnny? Oh, are you bumped up now because you know the new general manager,
bumped
David
up?
Caldwell?
No, I'm about as bumped down as you can be. I'm the senior writer and sliding fast.
Senior writer and sliding fast, John Osher, along with me, Jeff Lagerman. Brian Sexton's got the night off. A busy week this past week in Jaguar land. The day after this show, David Caldwell was introduced to the Jacksonville media and the people of Jacksonville. And I wasn't here to see it live. I did watch it to get all the details. And I was very impressed. Very impressed with the way he handled himself. Very impressed with how direct he was. And, Tony, I know you had some commentary about your thoughts on David Caldwell. And I think you're right on the money.
Well, listen, I was – and we talked about this last week, and I thought the start of his era as the GM, I don't think he could have done a better job. Now, ultimately – that's going to be the smallest part of what he'll be judged on. It would be who he names as head coach and how the draft goes for agency. And over, we'll look back 4 years from now, and I know all of us hope that you look back and say, boy, that was the greatest hire ever. But to kick off the press conference like he did and the conviction and the leadership, listen, all leaders, I believe, have a strong conviction of where they want to go. They have a vision of how they want to build something. Now, they might be wrong, and you might disagree with them. But they're leaders because they have that conviction. And I think David Caldwell showed that.
Well, and as much as – like when people think of GMs, they think he's the guy picking players, he's the guy scouting, he's the guy making those decisions. But as Jeff, you and I talked about earlier today, there is also, as Tony mentioned, a leadership and a – you know, for lack of a better phrase, a tone setting that he must do. And the vision must be there, and he's got to inspire some confidence at the beginning. That's not as important as the other parts of the job, but it does set the tone and it gets things started in the right direction.
Watching the press conference, you know, he took a lot of different questions. And watching it, you know, from the voices, I knew most of the members that were there at the press conference and most of the voices that were asking the questions. And Johnny O's voice pops up to ask a question, and David Caldwell turns and smiles and says, "Hey, John."
Well, I had the misfortune, first of all, I raised my hand. You know what you have to do in a situation, get the mic. And I sort of had this question about, you know, when did you sort of know it was the time? And right before my question, Vito brings up the Tebow thing. So, of course, I've got to be the mood killer now. And, you know, because all we want to talk about is Tebow. And that was a topic that had to be addressed. But I'm sitting there with the microphone. And as soon as the Tebow thing starts, I'm like, well, my question seems pretty stupid at this point. Which it probably would have anyway, but... to try to follow the Tebow that press conference was not easy.
But the reality is, the way he answered the Tebow question, there was nothing else to talk about.
True.
Nothing else on that matter.
Nothing else to talk about on that. Yeah, on Tebow. Nothing.
On that topic.
It's over.
Right.
You know, so, and my first thought was watching the press conference is that there's a familiar face in the room. And so, obviously, John, you've got some familiarity with David Caldwell. Your thoughts on David Caldwell. What do you know about David Caldwell? You experience with him in Indianapolis when he was working with Bill Polian.
Well, I'll preface it by saying, when I worked with David, I think he left in 06 or 07. At that point, he was not a lead decision maker with the Colts at that point.
I mean, but you get a feel for the type of person that somebody is.
He certainly had more responsibility. He left the Colts to take more responsibility in Atlanta and then earned his way to more responsibility once he was there. He always had a reputation among the Colts as a very respected guy. He was very young when I knew him and worked around other young guys at the time, Tom Telesco, Chris Polian, Tom Gamble, who was
they were all there at the same time.
In different capacities. Mm-hmm. And from talking to people then and since then about him, he was always considered one of the best eyes in the room, meaning as a scout he could see it. And he was also a guy who was very open to new ideas. He was already talking to their IT people at the time about some of the analytics stuff, some of the ways to sort of move into the future. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say in 2005 when I knew him that I was sitting there going, okay, this guy's going to be a GM in the league someday. But it was certainly a possibility, and people within that building believed that he was probably headed for that in that direction, as evidently a lot of them were. It was a good staff, and he was among the best on that staff.
And I have not had a chance to meet him yet, and I'm looking forward to it because obviously he's got other things on his plate. Top priority, finding a head coach.
And then meeting you. I mean, probably
that's
one, two.
Number two?
Yeah. Okay. Probably one, two.
Yeah, since he already met John. He knows John, and I already met him, so I guess that's all that's left to do is
put
meet
that
you.
As number two on the list. But I am looking forward to meeting him, and I know he's, is he 38?
38.
You know, relatively young guy, but, I mean, age doesn't matter. If you've got the talented eye and the organizational skills and leadership qualities, that's all that matters.
I thought what was particularly impressive, again, when I knew Dave in Indianapolis, no media experience whatsoever there. I guess he maybe had a little bit in Atlanta. But on Thursday, that was really his first time in that situation. I don't know how you prepare for that situation if you've never been in it before. But considering he had never been in that situation, never been sort of speaking for the team and being the spokesman, if you will, I thought considering that was his first time out, I thought he nailed it. And I've seen people fail in that situation. And it certainly inspired a lot of confidence, which was about all he could do that day.
He was pretty witty. I mean, the answer about the rearview mirror, I thought that was sharp.
It was sharp. Yeah, it was. Yeah, he's as we've all talked about. There's no way to know in his position if ultimately it will be success or failure. You can't. I got a question not today from somebody. How do we know that this guy is going to succeed? Well, you don't. But all you can do is bring the tools to the table. All Shad could do is, out of the candidates he had, pick the guy he felt most confident with. It was easy to see Thursday why there was a lot of confidence in David Caldwell.
How did you know that Ozzie Newsome would be a success? How did you know that Thomas Dimitroff would be a success? You don't know.
Forget the – I mean, Ozzie Newsome, I think Thomas Dimitroff example is a great one.
Sure.
A young guy gets his opportunity after working his way up through the scouting ranks – you know, director of personnel and all those things, and pretty much an unknown as far as how he was going to do it and what he was going to do, gets the reins. And you think it was tough here at 2-14. I think people forget what Thomas Dimitroff inherited at Atlanta.
It was a mess.
Bobby Petrino quitting midway through the year. Michael Vick, the face of the franchise, going to jail over dogfighting charges and really no direction. His first move was to hire Mike Smith.
And many people scoffed.
And not many. Everyone except for us who knew Mike Smith.
That's right.
And so
shocked when I saw that hire. And so I didn't know Mike.
But you didn't know Mike.
You didn't know Mike. Yeah. But you go back to Thomas Dimitroff, obviously convictions. I've got to know Thomas over the last several years doing games up there. And you can sense the type of guy he is in the leadership. And he speaks very highly of Dave, which is a great, obviously, endorsement. So I think that's a good kind of comparison. Now, we all hope that we have the same success. I mean, what the run Atlanta's gone over the last 5 years, four playoff appearances, they're in the NFC title game. I mean, that's impressive.
It also speaks to the point, Thomas, you know, he might be the one guy who has come out of New England and gone on to have success.
Yeah, there's not many.
But my point being, just because somebody's from somewhere doesn't mean success. And it doesn't mean failure. It's about picking the guy, and you got to go with it and follow that direction and hope that it works out.
No, but the one thing, though, that I like is that when you look at the stops that David Caldwell has made, he has had a chance to see how success is done. And I think that's key in my mind. All yours, Joe.
All right, Luggy. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Jaguars This Week rolls on right after this on Jaguars Radio. Well, season ticket owners, don't forget to use your Teal Deals by signing up at TealDeals.com and downloading over $5,000 worth of gift certificates. And you can use them all over Jacksonville, different merchants throughout the First Coast. Mr. Loggeman.
Thank you there, Joe. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week with Loggeman, Baselli, and Ozone, Johnny Osher. The reports coming from Paul Kuharsky at ESPN.com. Not to shortchange you or any, John, but the reports on the Jaguars coaching search is that Seattle Seahawks defensive coordinator Gus Bradley was traveling to Jacksonville today to do an interview on the Jaguars' job. He was in Philadelphia on Tuesday, which obviously the Philadelphia Eagles today and made the announcement that Chip Kelly is going to be their head coach. And so right now, according to Paul Kuharsky, the Jaguars have interviewed the Seahawks offensive coordinator, Daryl Bevel, Rams offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, and now Bradley, and maybe other candidates that we don't know about.
I think Jay Gruden has been in play.
Mel Tucker.
And Mel Tucker, obviously. So those are the – is that five we've gone over?
It's interesting. We talked about where, you know, Dave's come from Atlanta, and a lot of times you start building the way where you've seen people have success. So if we – we don't know Dave real well, none of us.
Right.
I mean, John, you spent time with him.
But what his style of
being a GM is going to be, because everyone has their style and their philosophy and how he's going to build this team and the type of coach he's going to look for. And so you go back and look at, Bill Polian and how he did things and the structure and so the mechanics of what he did. My guess is there's going to be some residue of that on what – Dave Caldwell does, but then even I think go to where he was just at with Thomas Dimitroff.
And I think that's the more important learning thing in this case.
I think that's more important. And so you look at what Thomas Dimitroff did. Thomas Dimitroff came in, really kind of got guys, I don't remember exactly who he kept and he got rid of, but kind of started dealing with the locker room and the culture in that locker room. But then he went and got a guy who was a football guy. I mean, Mike Smith was a football coach. He wasn't the hot name. He wasn't flashy. He wasn't hadn't coached before, never been a head coach. I don't think Mike Smith ever been a head coach anywhere, any level.
No, he had been a positional coach.
Positional coach.
I think a coordinator at Tennessee Tech, I believe, or something.
I mean, but yeah, nothing besides here. And Thomas Dimitroff found a football guy that he was comfortable with, that they shared a philosophy of how they were going to do something. And so my guess is I don't expect Dave to go hire a major name or a guy who's coached before. I think he's going to take that model. A football guy that he feels comfortable with, that they can build this thing together. Because really, Dimitroff and Mike Smith are married at the hip. I mean, they are work very close together. They have a great relationship, and they are building that organization on the football side together.
And so far, all of the names that you've heard speak exactly what you just said. When Dave was in Indy, Bill Polian hired two coaches in Indy until Jim Caldwell at the end, who kind of came along, and he was already there. He hired Jim Moore and Tony Dungy, two guys who were names and had coached already. Bill was also further along in his career. Dave is just starting, so it seems from the candidate list that what he's looking for is a young coach to build this thing with. I don't know that agents has that much to do with it, but similar guys at similar stages in their careers building towards something. So I think Atlanta is much more the model, which makes sense because he's just come there. 5 years, he saw how that worked. He's comfortable with that structure, so it makes sense that would be where he would look.
And if you wanted to say, the model was set in Atlanta, then who's reported to be interviewed here in Jacksonville, Gus Bradley, is a guy kind of along those same lines. Bradley basically didn't begin his NFL coaching career until 2006. So he's a very young guy, and linebackers coach the next two seasons after being a quality control coach, and was in college for 15 years prior to that, including two stints at North Dakota State and 4 years at Fort Lewis College, which I have no idea where
it's in Colorado.
Okay.
So I mean, I only know that because that's where
So if that was your first visit,
it's Durango, Colorado.
If you're trying to find somebody that would be similar along the lines of a Mike Smith, I mean, wouldn't Gus Bradley be kind of similar to that? Because Mike Smith came from relative obscurity to be a quality control coach type of guy in Baltimore, and then he finally got his shot here in Jacksonville.
Well, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I sort of like that. There are fans who are uncomfortable with guys they haven't heard of, but the bottom line is Shad had to find his guy in Dave, and Dave and Shad have to find their guy, and it doesn't have to be a guy who had any experience. That so doesn't translate to success.
But here's the debate, though, that you hear all the time. Do you get an offensive guy or do you get a defensive guy? And to me, doesn't matter.
Or do you get a special teams guy like John Harbaugh? Let me tell you who you get. You get the guy, because I am convinced, and I've said this, whether you are good with X's and O's and a good coordinator and a good play caller has nothing to do with whether you will be a good head coach.
Zero.
Because they have nothing to do with one another.
You need to be a leader.
You have to be a leader. And so I want to – you know who I want him to hire? I want Dave Caldwell to hire the guy who comes in here and sits down across from him, and Dave Caldwell is convinced this guy can lead 53 men and motivate 53 men. That's who I want to be the head coach. I don't care if he's ever done it before or never done it before. I want a leader.
And speaking to your point, Tony, I can remember talking to Tony Dungy early on in his time in Indianapolis. And we were on the topic of coordinators and head coaches, and he said exactly what you just alluded to. The biggest mistake many failed head coaches make is forgetting that they're not coordinators anymore and that it's not the same job at all. A successful coordinator, it almost doesn't prepare you in any way for the head
Zero.
Coaching job. You obviously have to have that on your resume.
Well,
I disagree. I would listen.
Well,
if there's a great position coach out there,
you don't have to, but you generally do have to have it.
You know,
most owners won't consider it.
Right. I know Russ Grimm, a number of years ago was almost for the Pittsburgh job and interviewed for several jobs over a couple year period. His name's kind of fallen off. And I'd have been.
Sure.
I don't know if Russ Grimm's a good head. Would be a good head coach or not? But just because he's just an offensive line coach, that would not.
Not at all.
Would not disqualify you, in my book, from being a great head coach.
But many owners, because of perception, are scared to pull the trigger on that coordinator.
That's why a lot of owners hire bad head coaches.
Well, you're exactly right.
And that's why about 6 to 8 of them get fired.
But I understand why that owners want to have some kind of a track record with a coordinator.
But that doesn't
because
show
what else
anything.
Do you go on from their point of view?
It doesn't show anything, but it does show that you can lead that half of a team, and it kind of gives you another indicator.
Yeah,
it's not the tell all, because so much of that is dependent upon the talent that you have and everything else and the head coach that's above the coordinator. So many variables.
But
there's no doubt you have to have a football mind.
And on that front, Keith
Armstrong
of the Falcons is not necessarily a guy who should be ruled out of this.
No, and Thomas Demetrius, did Thomas come out and say that, or – someone came out and said that they thought he'd be a good head coach. And I don't want to attribute it to Thomas Dimitroff or not. But
if they hire a special teams coach, he'll be up in arms. Oh, special teams coach. But
John Harbaugh's
as you mentioned,
good.
John Harbaugh, I think in a couple of years you might see a trend of that happen more often, and maybe Keith Armstrong's the first. Who knows?
I hope the trend is these owners go find out, or GMs, whoever's doing the hiring, go get guys who are leaders. The job of the head coach is to lead. It's to administrate, is to set the vision, to get everyone on the same page, set the culture, and then lead these guys and motivate them to play. That's their job.
And this is all great stuff, but I know you can't wait to talk about what's next.
Oh, this is unbelievable.
We'll get to it right after this, Joey.
All right, Loggy. Jaguars fans, you can be rewarded just for being social at the new Jaguars Social League. Sign up, sync your social media platforms at jaguars.com/social league. You get to earn points every time you post something Jaguars, and then use those points to win great prizes, including a chance to win tickets for the Jaguars game in London that's coming up in this October. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right after this on Jaguars Radio.
An incomprehensible six-hour time span, Notre Dame linebacker Manti Te'o learned that both his grandmother and his girlfriend had died. Overpowered by grief, he turned to his Notre Dame football family and to his faith. And then he went out and played what might have been the two best games of his career.
I was just, okay, first down, second down, third down. First quarter's done. Okay, second quarter. And I felt them with me. I felt all my loved ones with me. I literally felt them with me. And after every play I made, I said, that's for you. That's for both of you.
Terrio returned to campus this past Sunday.
Wow.
He spent the previous 4 days back in Hawaii at his grandmother's memorial.
If you haven't heard what the latest news is on Manti Te'o in this, what do you call it?
It's called, just for all those, Deadspin, which is a website online, broke a story today that a unbelievable story. Yeah. Basically, Manti Te'o, the Walter Camp Player of the Year, Maxwell Player, I mean, all these awards.
Facing Notre Dame football.
Top 10 pick in the draft,
yes,
possibly.
Was until, yeah, this and the game he played against Alabama. If you remember back during the season, it was late September, early October, a story before Michigan State where his grandmother and girlfriend died within a 24-hour period. He dedicated the game. He had the stories that he told himself on, you know, on video about talking to his
which was what we just heard.
Yeah, talking to his girlfriend nightly as he fought leukemia and how strong she was and the inspiration that she was. I mean, there's even quotes on Deadspin from his family and everything else. We came to find out today that this, whatever her name was, Lene something,
didn't exist.
Was a made up person. There's no records of her ever existing, having a Social Security, dying. Supposedly they met at Stanford in 2009. Stanford has no records of her ever being there. And this is one large hoax that Manti Te'o and Notre Dame are saying that he is the victim of.
Oh,
that,
come on.
That there were people that played this up.
He's commenting on it.
But listening to all the interviews he's done, how do you say you have a girlfriend that you spent time with and talk about, but yeah, it's a hoax? How are you the victim?
Johnny, in all your years,
this is amazing,
of covering sports, have you ever heard of such?
This is, well, a national story.
This is going to be so big.
It won't surprise people to say that I had many imaginary friends growing up, but I didn't, but
sure,
I didn't talk about it in Deadspin.
He was on ESPN talking about after the game,
right,
when they played Michigan State. He dedicated the game to her, and Brian Kelly gave a game ball
to
the dead fake girlfriend for Manti Te'o to take back to Hawaii for her.
Now, there are some brilliant tweets, obviously, about
come
this.
Come on.
We'll roll some out.
The best one might be, Brent Musburger is going to be really mad if it turns out he was ogling A.J. McCarron's imaginary girlfriend, which is really funny, by the way. And then there was a couple, you know, obviously there's
but we're talking Notre Dame, which may be the most powerful PR machine in all of college football, kind of bought in on it.
This guy was the runner-up to the Heisman, and Pete Prisco had a great tweet. He said, he asked the question on Twitter, is Rudy real?
Seth Meyers from Saturday Night Live tweets out, these Te'o jokes are all very funny. But let's try to remember that a person who never existed is really dead. I mean, it's phenomenal. I've never heard anything like it. I mean,
he is denying.
You would think NFL personnel people would be very concerned about it.
You know, I don't know if he's going to be playing. You got the East-West Shrine Game this week. Senior Bowl next week. And then the Combine soon to follow in February.
Well, there's an imaginary bowl game in February he's going to play.
Yeah.
With his fake girlfriend.
And then I think you have a real draft in April.
It's.
And how will this impact him? I mean, this is going to.
Well,
this is not going
to
be.
It'll
good.
Define him.
We have to let. Yeah. We'll let it play out because Notre Dame's saying he's the victim. I don't know if Manti's come out and had an official statement at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, everything he said is on record.
I know that, but that's what I agree.
Whatever he says now doesn't matter.
I don't see, but unless he can come up and the.
It better be a heck of a story.
He's better figure this out. Otherwise, I don't know how you recover from it. Number one, how sick in the head and how delusional and messed up are you if you've made this up and run with it? As
he
a
obviously
national
did.
Story.
So obviously sick.
So they went from winning one for the Gipper to winning one for the fake girlfriend.
The fake girlfriend. I mean, would you draft a psychotic dude like this?
I mean, they drafted you, so you know.
That's
I don't know.
So. Maybe Angie's fake. Maybe
but I mean, as a middle linebacker,
you want
to have your middle linebacker be a team leader. And so, how can you honestly bring somebody in and say he's going to lead our football team when he's got that background?
And, Jeff, what is the locker room going to do to him?
I know where it needs to go.
Could you imagine? Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, you remember our locker room, 95, and through the time I was here and the 3 years you were here. I mean, it was a pretty ribbing, and you better have some thick skin in that locker room. Could you imagine if Manti Te'o walked in with this story?
Oh.
I mean, he'd get destroyed.
Oh.
He would have been shredded. I mean, I don't know how you make it.
Well, he can't go to Oakland because Al Davis is no longer running the ship.
Right.
Okay, you got.
Where is he going?
Maybe
go?
He's not really dead.
Who?
Al Davis.
No,
it was a hoax.
Al is up in the big sky. The other place, though, that has become the new Oakland
Where?
Is Cincinnati.
No.
Right?
You can't. Listen, I don't know. I mean, I don't. The only way, the only way he overcomes this is wherever he gets drafted, and he's like an
maybe all a fake team will draft.
He's all and he's all pro. He's all pro, a real all pro for about 5 years, and then people just forget about it.
Can you imagine the number of jokes?
Oh,
David Letterman is going to have a field day for this.
Oh.
So can you come up, Johnny? Come up with something quick. David Letterman's
top ten
man
tie.
You could have a million of them.
Yeah, it's. I got to think it'll.
Are you getting calls?
I got to think it'll come up in the ozone mail.
Look, I had
show up with a blow up doll. Here she is.
I had no idea though.
That was
any
John down in the raincoat
until Tony walked in. Of course, Tony, did you graduate actually from USC?
I did.
He's a social media guy.
With the real diploma.
Okay, so it's not imaginary.
No, it's real.
Okay,
and
Angie is a real wife, not imaginary.
I can't confirm that I have a real wife and real five kids.
Has anybody ever met Angie?
No one's ever met Angie officially.
That's beautiful.
Oh boy! In the USC, you got to take a shot at the Notre Dame guys.
Listen, this is so easy.
It's so easy.
The fact that Notre Dame gave a game ball to a fake girlfriend is priceless.
Do they get it back?
I don't know. What does it say? Fake girlfriend?
Where is it?
I don't
know. Where is it? In some fake house and some
fake
trophy cabinet? Where's Walshy? Where's my Notre Dame friend Walshy?
When we come back, we'll talk about this past weekend in the NFL, and we'll talk about the upcoming
and the real and the real game.
And the real game.
I think we should keep talking about this.
That really matter.
All right. Hey, you getting your Jaguars rewards? Sign up at rewards.jaguars.com. Get cash back or credit for future season ticket purchases every time you shop online using the Jaguars Rewards website. That's rewards.jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. This portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Fanatics.com.
All right, this past weekend may have been the best divisional weekend in NFL history. Certainly in my recent memory, and of course the memory doesn't go back very far, but the first game on the books.
You even remember last
year. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. But the first game Saturday, Denver and Baltimore,
was a fantastic game,
and I still cannot believe that John Fox, with Peyton Manning and two timeouts, chose to take a knee with 31 seconds left.
Well,
horrible.
The rumor, and Twitter and all this stuff, you know, it's true, but that Peyton was starting to have numbness in his fingers during the game or something. I mean, I don't know if Peyton's health had something
That's
to do.
That's the one thing that crossed my mind, especially after the pass.
Right.
And
there
was a pass earlier that he sort of floated to Stokely.
He wasn't throwing great. So
I don't know
if they said, listen, the health of Peyton is not going to allow us to take shots down the field. Could lead to issues. Let's just get it over.
I thought that late, but you still two timeouts.
I'm just telling you. I mean, John Elway to come out the next day and say, and I know John's just supporting his head coach.
Right. Sure, that's all he was doing.
But saying I would do the same thing, 100 times over. I'm just saying.
If Peyton was hurt,
if Peyton's
then
hurt,
you would
Jeff,
do the same
it's something
thing,
different. I mean, I'm not saying he is or not, but there was a lot of noise out there through social media and people talking that there was something going on with Peyton during that
he
game.
He certainly threw the ball late in that game
a couple of times
where you thought, this is not what he was doing 6 weeks ago.
I could not believe that they chose to do that. And then once they got to overtime, sitting there watching the game with some of my boys, and I said, I got a feeling that Peyton's going to screw it up. And that throw that he made across his body on the run was – I mean, that when you look at the quarterback list of things not to do, that is number one. Across your body on the run.
I didn't see the 98 or 99 playoff games. I saw all of his playoff games from, 02 to time I left. Worst throw I've seen making the playoffs. And it was, again, as Tony said, there were a couple of throws late in that game that made me wonder if something was up.
I don't know. And, of course, we're not going to find anything out about it.
No, you'll never know.
The game that was later that evening, Green Bay and the 49ers, Colin Kaepernick, wow.
It was good till the fourth quarter, and then Colin Kaepernick took over.
And I mean, just
that Green Bay defense had no clue.
And because of the style was so different.
Yeah.
You know, and Colin Kaepernick is so fast. I mean, when he got into an area that was open, he just separated so fast with speed. And there are different guys. I mean, you can put them on a watch on the track, and then guys that you watched on game day. And perfect example, Tony, is the guy we played with, Jimmy Smith. When you put Jimmy Smith on the clock, on the track, in a 40-yard dash, he might run a 4-5, low 4-5 range. But when he was on the field on game day, he separated from guys that ran 4-4 and were faster, 4-3, high 4-3s. You know, so some people just have game day speed, and Colin Kaepernick has tremendous game day speed.
You still wonder if that style can be supported long term with the injuries, but short term.
They all end up in the pocket, John. Look at RG3.
Right. Short term, though, it is dazzling.
If you were a defensive coordinator and they ran that read option, wouldn't you just tell your defensive end hit the quarterback as hard as you can every time?
If I'm Mike Smith,
eventually that's what will happen. That's why they wear down.
I'd hit him every
quarterbacks
time.
Wear down trying to play that way.
And the Sunday games, the Seattle Atlanta game.
I was there for that one.
That's holy cow.
I cannot explain, unless you were there, and I'm sure it was the emotion in that game, because Atlanta, talking to everyone before the game, I mean, it was pressure as far as we need to get this, Tony Gonzalez, Mike Smith, Matt Ryan, I mean, just to get the monkey off our back. And they started so fast, and they were rolling. And in the third quarter, it's 27-7, and then Seattle gets the ball, and they just start marching.
21 points in the fourth quarter.
You could feel
tense.
The Atlanta sidelines, the fans were like, you're squeezing something and trying to hold on to it, and it's just slipping away from your hands, and the panic. And just like the thought of, I cannot believe this is happening. And from that, for Matt Ryan and that group to come on the field after losing the lead for the first time all day with 34 seconds left,
and
then to go down and to get in the field goal range, hit that field. I was on the Seattle – because
franchise defining.
I was on the Seattle sideline because doing the sidelines for Dial Global Sports, I have to get a interview immediately after the game. So I'm on –
We saw you. We saw you there.
Thank you. I was on Atlanta sideline for most of the fourth quarter because I'm thinking they're going to hold on. And then all of a sudden it starts slipping, so I run over to the Seattle.
Well, you didn't run.
Yeah, I did.
Didn't.
Yeah, I did. I ran over to the other side. So I'm sitting there talking to the PR guy saying I want Richard Sherman.
Maybe a light
because
job.
TV was going to – that was a run. It was going to go with Russell Wilson. And he said, great, we'll get him. And I go, where do you want me? He tells me. Well, then all of a sudden Atlanta lines up for the field goal. Makes it, and I'm sprinting now to the
sprinting.
My
quotes,
right?
Quotes,
yeah, sprinting to the other side to get to the Atlanta PR guys to tell him I need Tony Gonzalez because TV's taken, and that place erupted. You talk about a place rocking, and then they kick it off, and they miss hit the squib.
Yeah, but you know what though? Before that, Tony, Mike Smith made a mistake when they had the opportunity when they completed the pass to Tony Gonzalez. And they chose to use a timeout.
They should have let it burn down.
They should have
called
six. No, they should have clocked it. They should have lined up, spiked it. They still would have had one more play because at that point they were saying we're satisfied with a 49-yard field goal opportunity.
But, Jeff, here's the thing. So they complete that ball down the field about 20 yards with 13 seconds on the clock.
Right.
That was when the timeout was called, which was not immediate.
Yes, it was. Mike Smith was on. Yes, no. I'm just telling you, I was right there. Mike Smith was on the sideline calling timeout immediately when the ball was completed.
But that was his mistake. He should have called it with 7 seconds left.
No.
I agree with that part.
Even if you call it with 13 seconds left, you still got time for one play to get 5 yards closer.
No, you don't because
yes, you do.
You do because you still had the timeout. You spiked the ball. You still had the timeout.
Guys, you're missing the point. So
they wouldn't have had time to spike it.
Yeah, you would because.
And if they didn't, and they have no timeout, you still take a quick throw outside.
Yeah, but the
with
risk,
13 seconds
the
left,
risk is
you got Matt Ryan.
It doesn't matter the risk of getting sacked. Russell Wilson, the Seattle Seahawks tried to do the same thing at the end of the first half. They had no timeouts left. They said we have enough time to take one more shot. They run a quick pass, the three technique. gets up in the A gap, Jeff, and sacks him immediately before he can hit his third step, and the clock runs out because they have no timeouts.
Okay.
Risk reward.
All that said, Walshy in the building.
What happened to the kickoff, though, after that?
Oh, that was, I was like, I'm sitting on the sidelines. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. What are they doing? I think he just mishit it.
That was unbelievable. All right, real quick, the Patriots game went exactly like I thought.
They're better. Yeah.
Predictions for this week's game? Start with the AFC.
It's Patriots and 49ers, and the 49ers win it all.
I got the same one.
You got the same?
I think the 49ers win it way
all.
Too
I got the Patriots and 49ers, and I'm with you. I think the Patriots,
win it all. I'm rooting for Smitty. I can't do it because I'm going to be doing the game, but gosh,
I am too.
I want Smitty to win. But I just don't think they can hold up on defense.
I don't believe the Ravens certainly can hold up on defense. Now, I don't know if the 49ers can or not, and that's a lot to ask.
They're not scared of the Patriots.
They are not scared. They beat them a couple weeks ago.
I'm talking about the Atlanta 49er game. I don't know if Atlanta can hold up on defense against the
49ers. No.
And here's the other thing. The matchup to watch offensively for Atlanta is Sam Baker, an undersized left tackle, only 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. Justin Smith, Alden Smith, all day on that side. I mean, that's going to be a tough matchup, I think, for him.
Yeah. Yeah, but to me, if you're Mike Smith, though, what are you doing? You're selling out to stop the 49ers run game, and you've got to make Colin Kaepernick beat you from the pocket.
If I'm Mike Smith in the first quarter, I tell my two defensive ends, every time they run the read option, you hit him as hard as you can. If you get a penalty, we'll take our chances.
And pile on.
I would pound him.
Yeah, but you got to stop Frank Gore, too.
Well, give up some yardage early.
But you can't allow him to beat you with his legs.
No, you got to
can't allow him.
Him
make him beat you with his arm.
Now, the problem is, I think the Packers tried that too. It didn't work out so well.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they knew.
I think that was their thought process, but they couldn't
execute it.
The way they tried to execute it did not work.
I know the 49ers. You try to figure out a team that's going to beat them.
Yeah, but let me tell you,
who I can't.
Yeah,
I mean, as far as team,
I disagree.
They're really
good. We forget the Seattle Seahawks blew them out. The Rams beat them.
Yeah,
I mean, let's tell you what.
The Seahawks blew them out. They were coming back.
Tell me the Rams' excuse. The Rams beat them.
You have certain games during the regular season.
I'm just telling you, John.
They're not scared of the Patriots.
That's fine. I don't think the Patriots are afraid of them either.
I just hope that this weekend is as good as this past weekend and that the Super Bowl is just as good as last weekend as well.
And I hope it's not fake.
I'm just sad it's almost over.
No girlfriends this weekend. It'll be just fine. The games this week are real, folks. Talk to everybody next week.
See ya.
See ya.